Paul Lambert und Karl-Heinz Riehl 1:0 für Borussia Dortmund.
Alan McInerney, meine Damen und Herren.
Welcome back to another episode of the German Football Podcast. Last week we had Fergal on and we're joined by Ronan. This week it's a completely different view, apart from myself being back in here hosting. But we're going to split this up slightly. We're going to have, for the first part of it, it's going to be myself, Robert and Colin. We'll speak about some important controversial factors in Germany over the weekend. Plus, later on, our resident 1860 München fan, George Balakrishna, will give us the whole lowdown on what happened between Sascha Mulder's 1860, everything going on in that absolute, what seems like an absolute mess. But as we said about the new features scene we're going for, I think this week kind of wrote itself with the controversy. So we're going to speak about Felix Weyer, Jude Bellingham, Jesse Marsh, Dominic Tedesco, a bit on Bakary Yata as well, and like we said, a bit on Sascha Mulder's later with George. But let's introduce the boys first. And we have across the road in Hamburg, it's Robert Haggis. How are we doing, mate?
Thanks for giving my full name there. I'm doing well, thanks. Unfortunately, couldn't meet Ronan and Fergal whilst they're in Hamburg because I was supporting another sport, doing a bit of hockey with my parents whilst they were over in Hamburg. But yeah, I'm doing well, thanks. Looking forward to going back to the UK in a week or so's time, if we're hopefully allowed back in.
Let's talk about the positive. Actually, we're not talking about anything positive tonight. Actually, yeah, but it fits in the mood. Definitely fits in the mood. But also across in the west coast of Scotland with Colin Moore. I don't know why I'm going to fill names tonight, but I like it. It's Colin Moore. How are you doing, mate?
I'm not bad. Just on the theme of full names, yesterday I got a delivery driver came to my door with a package from our neighbours, and he was asking what my name, because... this is such a pointless story. Had it in a package from my neighbours, and had to take my name for the note, and he thought my name was Colin Mueller, so he wrote Colin Mueller on the slip.
Just
add a wee bit of German theme. That was a completely pointless story.
You spend one weekend in Germany and everyone thinks you're German, though.
I know.
Long lost relative of Thomas.
Apart from that, I'm all right. I was going to ask. I was actually going to ask Robert. It sounded like you're saying you're playing hockey against your parents. There, is that what happened?
That's something I used to do. Sorry, that wasn't particularly clear. We went to watch some indoor hockey in Klein Flottbeck in Hamburger Polo Club against Harvester Huda. And especially in the men's game at 4 o'clock, there was a bit of niggle by the end. Loved a bit of niggle and everyone getting a bit overexcited.
God, we're turning into the German all sports podcast. Last week with the handball, this week with the hockey. We've definitely got everything covered. Everything you need covered by everyone, 100%. Shall we jump into the main theme of the week? Obviously, a lot of controversy going on in Germany. Shall we start with probably the most talked about over the last week, which was Felix Zweier? Who wants to take this? Carl, we'll give you a wee bit first. Do you want to give us a wee lowdown on Felix Zweier, why he was at the centre of attention after the Bayern München versus Borussia Dortmund, or as I should say correctly, Borussia Dortmund versus Bayern München, as it was home in Dortmund, why he was at the centre point of this controversy and where that controversy originally came from?
Where to start? I think it's a thing a lot of people probably didn't even realise. People of a certain age, particularly us, about Felix Zweier until it was actually mentioned by Jude Bellingham. So actually during the game, a couple of controversial incidents, Dortmund could have had a penalty, Zweier chose not to consult with VAR, but Bayern ended up being awarded a penalty from a controversial handball incident concerning Mats Hummels. And Bellingham said after the game about how it was controversial that Zweier had been appointed to the game considering his history of match fixing. And that you have to go back to the mid-2000s for that. The well-documented Robert Heutzer affair, so who was a Berlin-based referee who had been convicted of match fixing on behalf of a Berlin-based Croatian organised crime group in the mid-2000s. And he was part of a number of games that are fixed, including Haswell losing to Paderborn in the Pokal 2004. But one of those games was actually involving Felix Zweier in 2005, I think it was. Anyway, Zweier was found to have accepted a 300 euro bribe in favour of Wuppertal and was actually banned from officiating games for 6 months. This at the time wasn't actually reported or it wasn't released to the press by the DFB. I think a big reason for that was this was obviously just in the lead up to the 2006 World Cup hosted in Germany, and they didn't want the bad publicity. So it was actually reported by the German newspaper Die Zeit in 2014, many years later, that this had actually happened, and Zweier had been banned for 6 months from officiating, but he's actually continued since. I would say if, at the time, if it had come out, it's a question whether he would have been allowed to continue officiating at all. I think one thing that played in his favour was he was one of the people that sort of testified against Heutzer, the main referee in the whole situation. But I would say a lot of people would say he's come off lightly. That's a wee bit of background for you.
Yeah, definitely. And Robert, just to bring you in, do you think this is something that's generally... I think I've not heard much of in the UK media about this. Do you think it's only come into light only because an English footballer has brought it up? And, like, is that something that's just interesting to think about because it's a massive thing that happened in Germany for a long time, but UK don't really know much about it?
No, I don't think... many people in Germany really know about it because, like Colin says, it happened quite a long time ago. Almost 15 years ago. I was quite surprised. I mean, it was on the top page of the BBC on Saturday, although BBC do seem to be pushing the Bundesliga a bit more these days. And also Dortmund against Bayern is the one game that really grabs attention in the UK. And there was just a bit sort of extra information to sort of what Colin says and what happened this week. Was that, so Bellingham was fined 40,000 euros by the DFB, which I also thought was quite a lot of money considering, Heutzer made, I think it was 67,000 from all of his bribes. So it seems a bit sort of out of proportion, maybe. Dortmund said that they'd split, Hans-Joachim Watzke spoke to the press yesterday and said they'd split the fine between Bellingham and Dortmund, so he wouldn't have to pay all of it. But also, Zweier wrote a letter to Dortmund asking for a personal chat with Bellingham and a sincere apology from him. But then the problem was that this letter and the comments of the letter also appeared in Bild about an hour later. And so Watzke said, we're not having a personal chat with a guy who leaks everything to the press. So I feel like Zweier's come away really badly from this, because I mean, yeah, it obviously shows that he's not too reticent about what he did, the fact that he's still pushing Bellingham for an apology when in all honesty Bellingham didn't say anything wrong. He just stated the fact that is plainly true, and the fact that he's pushing for an apology from Bellingham is a bit much, in my opinion. I don't know if I really answered your question, but I was just adding
No, it's good to add that extra point in. Like, I think we could all tell, like, that, I mean, most of our viewers come from the UK, so they'll either know it or they'll not know it, so it's fine. But what you said, you know, it makes a lot of sense. That it's mad how this fine came to Bellingham. And my next question was going to be to both of you, and it's interesting the way you ended it, Robert. I want to know if you agree. Why is Jude Bellingham making that comment? He's a 19-year-old football player that has only been in the country for a wee while. Probably has been fed this information through Dortmund in a biased term because of, you know, like, something's gone against him. Do you think you should be making those comments as a young football player that probably doesn't know much about what he's saying?
I was quite surprised initially that he actually knew about it. I feel like that's not something that the Dortmund press officer is going to have fed Bellingham just before he goes into an interview. I feel like that's probably maybe something that was talked about in the dressing room. I was surprised that he actually knew it. I personally don't have any problem with him saying that. It was a pretty poor refereeing performance from Sfire. And as I said before, what he said isn't lacking in factual basis. What he said is true. And it's understandable that he's very emotional after a disappointing and controversial loss.
What stand do you take from that, Colin? Because that's something that we do enjoy about Bellingham, is he's very vocal. If he is disappointed after a match, he'll tell you. He's not shy from cameras either, as you now you can see. But where's your standpoint on it? Do you agree with what Robert said there? Do you think he shouldn't be saying things like that as a young footballer who probably doesn't know much about what he's mentioned?
No, I think for a young player, obviously that means at the time that it happened, he was a wee boy, basically. But obviously it's a subject that has come up in the dressing rooms. And I think in his interviews, he is quite, for a young player, he is pretty articulate and confident in front of a camera that he can bring forward these points. And I thought he did it in a reasonable way. It's not like he's lying. What he was saying was true. And if he is saying it, and he's obviously been passed on, I mean, he's only been playing for Dortmund for a relatively short while. But in that time, obviously, the word spread about Sfire. So it is clearly a topic among Bundesliga players that maybe he does have that reputation and lacks a bit of respect among the professionals. I thought one thing I'd saw during the week, which I thought was quite a good comparison, Manuel Graefe, who's a previous ref, was forced to retire after he passed the age limit, now 48. So he's no longer able to referee. He was actually one of the referees during the Heutzer affair that assisted the DFB in their investigations, bringing forth their suspicions about Heutzer. And I think he's spoken out many times in the past about Sfire and criticising him and his role in refereeing being able to continue. But just by contrast, he was a referee that always seemed to have the respect of the players. But then you've got Sfire, who is obviously younger and still able to referee, but has these allegations against his name and clearly has less respect from the players. From a point of view of priorities, it seems like, I don't know, it seems almost backwards that one referee can't continue just because of an arbitrary age rule and the other while having these allegations and sort of like a stain on his credibility against them, still is managing to continue. That's a long-winded answer. I can't even remember what your question was. But
did you have an opinion, Roy? It sounded like you had an opinion the way you asked the question, or?
No, I'm just, that's how the host does the job, Robert. You've got questions in
on balance, though, you could say that Zaya has, he's lived out his term. Well, he wasn't, he served his ban, 6 months. So he should be able to start afresh after that. I think that it just caused more problems, the fact that it was hidden and covered up at the time. During that whole period.
Like, where do you guys think after this it's going to go? Is it just going to go straight back under the carpet, Robert? Do you think something's going to happen now? We're in a better age of, if things go out into the media, it really kind of hinder people's career. I know that sounds a bit silly, but for how long this has been brought up? I think it got re-brought up in like 2014 was maybe one of the last times, if I'm reading that correctly.
Yeah, I think that was when the Die Zeit article that Colin was talking about came out.
So... It's still like there's more like this kind of cancel culture, shall we call it? Well, like could that happen to Zwire now? Do you think he could end up like not refereeing again? Do you think they'll be brushed under the carpet? Like, what's your thoughts on that?
when cancel culture comes with Felix Zwire, I feel like it's just going to be swept under the carpet, to be honest. Because that was also what Vatska said in his when he was speaking to the press, that they accepted the decision and the fine from the DFB because they needed a bit of stability within the club, and because they didn't want Bellingham to actually be banned for a game. So I feel like with the games this weekend, the news cycle is going to move on, and I don't think anything's really going to really happen about it, because also the DFB's official referee observer, Marco Haase, also pressed charges against Bellingham. I think it was libel charges. So it definitely shows that DFB stands behind Zweier, and they feel sort of what Colin was saying, that he's done his time and he's one of the best referees in Germany. So I feel like everyone will probably move on.
Do you, Colin, just to take another standpoint on it, just to kind of finish up on it, do you think Dortmund have used this to scapegoat their defeat more than they maybe should have, or do you think they've rightly used it as much as they're allowed to?
Not to bring too many opinions from another podcast on, but I was listening to Talking Fussball about it. And they were talking and making the point that it's just really part of the game, the media game. Bayern do it all the time. You sort of want to put pressure on the officials and stuff, and there is the perception that Bayern do get favoured in title races. And, I mean, Bayern players wouldn't be scared to do the same, trying to put pressure on officials to try and, if they feel that they are being harshly treated. So in the future, I think it's going to be a talking point in these games, and maybe officials will be reluctant to give borderline calls in favour of Bayern, so it could benefit Dortmund in the long term. So you can say all you want about Dortmund's performance. Bayern won again. Even if that decision hadn't gone against them, they still could have come on top, as they usually do against Dortmund, because they are the better team. But just in terms of a psychological impact on the officials, it could benefit them.
Jesse Marsh has obviously departed from RB Leipzig this week following the defeat to Union Berlin, and he was then recently replaced by Domenico Tedesco, who is well known in Germany for obviously having a good spell with Erzgebirge Aue and Schalke 04 as well, but obviously recently been at Spartak Moscow. I kind of want just to know your opinions on this, guys, because it's a bit of an interesting one. RB sacking a manager, well, coming to mutual terms with the manager to leave. Colin, you're going to take more of the lead on this one. What's your thoughts on it? Is it something that you expected from a Leipzig side to do? Did you expect them to lose a manager so early on? Fun fact, no RB manager has lasted more than 100 games, but I suppose you could say that is down to them being a club that's there for people to work through, stepping stones sort of situation. So just your overall opinion on what's happened so far anyway.
Yeah, it's quite strange because of those coaches that have lasted less than 100 games, you go through them and it's like, there's like Hasenhüttl, and sort of, I think he wanted to move on. He wanted to take the stepping stone to the Premier League. Then there's Rangnick, who took over as the head coach, but that was always only going to be temporary. Then Nagelsmann was always going to move on to bigger and better things. He's now at Bayern. So they're not, as a club, as a young club that has always been on an upward trajectory, they're not really used to being in crisis mode, really. They're not used to coaches failing. So it's almost a new situation. It seems like usually the future coaching moves are usually so meticulously planned out. So it's quite strange for them sacking a coach less than halfway through a season. Although, having said that, from hearing reports, it was as if Marsh had also accepted that he wasn't really the man for the job. I'm not sure if he felt slightly out of his depth. He's previously been in the Austrian league, which is completely different to Germany in terms of standard, and he's just not really adapted. And I know a lot of people have pointed to the sort of tactics he's sort of favours the pressing approach, which you saw a few years ago from Leipzig, but they sort of moved on from that under Nagelsmann to more possession-based style of football, and it was almost as like they'd regressed slightly and was going up slightly backwards. They've gone, I mean, he's gone now. The results really haven't been up to scratch. They're falling really behind and on track for the Champions League places. Tedesco was quite a strange appointment, though. I know he got Schalke second that season. I know you said third, just correcting you there. It was actually second, but that was, the football was pretty poor. I thought it was pretty functional at the time. And I also thought it was a very weak Bundesliga season that year. Dortmund, Leipzig, all the top teams were underperforming, and it was only really through Schalke being consistent and managing to grind out results that they managed to get so high. And then really it all turned pear-shaped the following season with Schalke under Tedesco. Nearly got relegated two seasons before their actual relegation. So it's an interesting one. He's not in Germany anyway. He wasn't known for his attacking approach, which you'd expect from a Leipzig team. So it'd be interesting to see how he fits in. I'm not really sure much of what his spell at Spartak Moscow was like. I don't really follow Russian football, but Robert might.
No, I don't follow much Russian football. I don't really follow much Rasenballsport Leipzig either. So I'm not sure I have a particularly well-informed opinion on this one. But I think it's true what you're saying. Tedesco wasn't known for his attractive style of play when he was at Schalke or at Auer. And that seems to be part of the problem with Marsh, that they were going backwards. And they do have quite a lot of flair players at Leipzig. But similar to you, I wasn't particularly fussed either way by the decision of Leipzig.
Do you think, Colin, that Marsh was ready for that role? A lot of people had said beforehand that he needed a stepping stone between the Salzburg and Leipzig, because what Leipzig had become was far bigger than what Salzburg currently operate in. Do you think he needed that stepping stone before that, or do you think that looked like a natural progression?
I don't know. It just seems like that's a lot of clubs go to a coach that has been through that system, that route, Salzburg, like Rosa and Hütter, and they sort of seamlessly transitioned to Bundesliga, I would say. Although Hütter had a spell, I think he was at Young Boys in between that. So that was sort of like a stepping stone. It was like Austrian and Swiss football. It didn't go straight from Salzburg to the Bundesliga, but I'm not sure. I mean, I didn't actually know that much about Marsh before he joined Leipzig, aside from the fact that he was so heavily linked from them. Maybe it was a step too far for him, and it would have been more suited to a move in between that, rather than going straight to Leipzig. Where he goes forward from this, I'm not really sure. Whether he can, I don't know, maybe he'll want to go back to Austrian or Swiss football, maybe somewhere else in Europe, or even back to the US, coaching the MLS, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because you don't really know where he could take it, and I don't see him getting a Bundesliga job again now after that. I also don't see one really coming up that he would want to go to. I think he likes the aspect of what the Red Bull project is. It's a project. I think he likes that, and I think that's probably a reason why.
I hate that word, by the way.
Sorry?
I hate that word, by the way. See when players and stuff say, if it was like just an excuse for players and coaches to say that when they're joining a small club with money, like, yeah, we've got a really good project here.
Queen's Park, great project. But maybe we'll be going to Queen's Park, you never know. But there's not really anywhere that you can just say, oh, that's a Jesse Marsh club to go to, you know? And I think he's not really had that time to put his mark on things. And it's just a really interesting one, and I'm quite surprised. I mean, I this is probably something you could comment on, Robert. Do you think Leipzig, for how short a time they've had, and like I said, with all the managers they've had, they've only had just less than 100 games. No one's managed to break that yet. Do you think they're allowed to sack someone because of the position the team were in? considering obviously recently they've been finishing in the top three, they've been doing really well, they did really well in the Champions League in the past couple of seasons. Do you think they've got the rights to sack someone like that in that mind, the frame of mind of you're not performing the way Leipzig should be performing, considering it's only been for a short period of time? And this isn't a dig on Red Bull Leipzig or anything, it's generally just because it's a new, it's just a new thing that's happened in the Bundesliga. Well, how long have they been in the Bundesliga? 6-7 years? So, like, I'm just interested if you have that opinion.
Yeah, I think if you do take away the fact about how they came to be as a club, I think it is fair enough that they sacked him, because they are underperforming in their expectations. They do have a very, very talented squad with some great players who aren't performing to their best at this moment in time. And like I said, I haven't followed them particularly closely, but it seems like he didn't have a particularly good relationship with any of the players or anything like that. So I think it's fair enough from them, because they have been very consistent since they have joined the Bundesliga, being pretty much top four every season. So it's below their expectations. And sort of as Colin was alluding to, it's just whether Tedesco will be able to get them into that top four by the end of the season.
Carl, do you have any input on that question there, or do you feel like you kind of covered it earlier? Like, do you feel that they're allowed to have that position of what a big club, for instance?
I think they're I don't particularly think much of them, but I would say in terms of their performance and stuff over the last few years, they have definitely earned the right to consider themselves among one of the best clubs, best performing clubs, and the expectations change with that. I mean, nothing stays the same. Just because they're a relatively new club and they were promoted a few years ago, they don't always have to consider themselves in a, like, small, as a part of a small club mentality almost. They got to the Champions League semi-finals two seasons ago. Like, obviously, with that comes heightened expectations. And when the Champions League qualification is under threat, then that's obviously going to lead to, that's going to lead to consequences if they're not performing.
Yeah, no, just a quick one there on Marsh, because we don't want to go too in-depth on it either, because it's not the most exciting part of the thing that's happened this week either. But yeah, another controversial thing that happened was obviously Jesse Marsh losing his job and Tedesco coming in to replace him at RB Leipzig after a poor start to the season. Robert, you're going to take lead on the third of the four topics we're going to talk about. Bakary Yata, I feel this is something that's not really been mentioned much in UK either, so it'll be interesting to hear the point of view in English about it as well. He has obviously came to light again that he's been kind of prosecuted for breaching the Residency Act and false certification. I don't know if you could maybe give us a bit of a background to where that originally came from and what is actually going on with Bakary at the moment.
Yeah, well, in fact, that was at the start of my time at Haasfal in August 2019, my second month, that there was a report in Sportbild how Bakary Yata had was using a false identity and was actually 2.5 years older than he claimed to be, and was using a different name. At that time, it caused quite a big scandal. And I think it was three or four clubs retrospectively claimed the points against Haasfal, because they said that they were, because the guy was that Haasfal were fielding an ineligible player because he was older than he said he was.
Sorry, I'm just laughing at retroactively.
Colin's giving me a taste of my own medicine, laughing while I'm whilst he's talking.
It was Nuremberg, Bochum, and Karlsruhe, by the way.
Yeah,
I was there.
Are we getting this? Don't know if you're gonna
But yeah, so three clubs retrospectively complained or filed a complaint saying that they deserved the 3 points because Haasfal were fielding an eligible player. That was in August 2019. And then at the beginning of September 2019, the Hamburg authorities said they ended their investigation into into Bakaryata's past because he'd showed them documents and also a passport proving his identity. But as you were saying, Roy, it's reared its head again this week, and the public prosecutors brought charges against Bakaryata to a juvenile magistrate, actually, because they're claiming that he was actually older than he claims to be, and he wasn't a child. And yeah, accused of offence against the residency laws and additional charge of faking documents. He came to Germany in the summer of 2015 from Italy, and said he was born on 6th of June 1998 to achieve juvenile status, so he was treated as underage and thus improved his chances of getting or being approved as an immigrant or refugee. And I think a few people have made a point this week, but I think it's just a real shame how, firstly, for Bakaryata, this is still following him. This is, what, two and a half years later? And it's still following him. You think about the effect it must have on him, that all the time, even though he's tried to prove his identity, still being questioned by the authorities and obviously members of the press and some political parties. And yeah, I think it's just incredible from him, really, that he's managed to still play football to a very high standard whilst these questions are hanging over him. And also sort of the questions it has about Germany's sort of immigration laws, and how even if this is proved to be true, which doesn't seem like it will be, you've got to question the laws where people sort of it goes against Germans' sort of love of bureaucracy, that he has to prove that he's a child to improve his immigration status, which obviously makes very little sense.
100%. It's just this, like, I don't know if we're here to talk about football, but if you talk about this is just someone who's imagine having to do that to make sure that you're definitely going to get somewhere to get somewhere else that's going to make you have a better life as well. It's really disappointing to hear this kind of, it's been continued on. And obviously, I mean, Colin, just to bring you in slightly on it, obviously we had something recently with the Bundesliga with Silas from Stuttgart. So it's not a new thing that's been in the news recently, but I don't think this one's really been covered in the UK. So it's got similar connotations to the Silas case as well. He was banned for 6 months.
Yeah, I think the difference is that this has come to the media and build. I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with it, but it's like sort of slightly German version of the Sun, sort of like a right leaning tabloid. So a lot of people saw the reports sort of like a slightly xenophobic undertones. The difference with Silas is that it was reported by the club. They sort of think he'd come clean to the club about his identity. He'd actually admitted that he wasn't really subject to the same investigations. But I mean, it is sort of a similar case. It's just different the way this has come. I mean, this hasn't been proven. This is just, it's all pending an investigation, really. Nothing's been proven so far. But I don't know. It seems to have had a slightly uglier side to it, because seems to be a sort of an agenda from the press, which most people have stood against. I know even like St. Pauli have stood against it with their campaigns, social media and stuff like that as well. And a lot of people have stood in solidarity with Yata, which is, it's good to see you. Whereas Silas, I don't think anybody really knew about it until it was actually reported by the club as well. And because there wasn't the speculation about it, I think he received a lot more of a fair treatment, almost, because there wasn't just speculation that rumbled on and on for a couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just a shame that we've had to become to this state with someone once again. And it goes beyond football, like Robert mentioned. It kind of goes beyond football, what's kind of being sent with you as well. So are we Do we know anything, Robert, about what could potentially happen if it goes through, if it does go through? Like, I know you said it looks very unlikely that anything could happen, but do you know of anything that could happen to him? Or, well, I guess, do you think it'll be similar to if it does something that happened to Silas?
I think that Silas, the punishment was handed out by the DFB, right? That he couldn't play for 6 months, whereas this is obviously the Hamburg authorities, and I assume it's the, well, it's the Hamburg public prosecutor. I don't know if it's the immigration office. So no, to be honest, I'm not entirely sure what the consequences could be. But I mean, like you were saying before, it doesn't seem to have been as big of a story this week in Germany, because it's just sort of a regurgitation of the facts. And as you were saying before, HSV they've sort of released a statement on Tuesday, just saying that the whole club's still behind him. They don't seem to have created quite the same waves that it did 2.5 years ago.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think it was worth bringing it to light. Obviously, a lot of people back home might not have actually heard anything about that. So that was just a wee bit on back of the Yatos and going through some difficult period of time at the moment. But guys, like I said, George is going to jump in a couple of minutes, hopefully. We'll speak to him soon. He's been a bit busy at the moment, unfortunately. After scheduling podcast time, then decides to go to football training. So we'll be having words with him when he's here. But we're going to talk about Sascha Mulders, as he's a resident 1860 Drittliga expert, what we call him, on the podcast. But have you guys got anything to kind of add before we say goodbye to you two and bring him in, just about the 1860 thing, or should we just leave it all to big George Balakrishna, since I'm going with full name statuses tonight?
I just had one point, which I'd written down in my notes, and we talked about a bit before we started the podcast, which was the fourth Magdeburg goal on Saturday is perhaps one of the most comic goals that I've seen in recent times with Boris Atik. passing the ball across the box, I think his name's Kreilinger for 1860, trying to clear and passing it straight into the path of Schuler. I physically laughed out loud at the goal. It was that comical, some pretty terrible defending by 1860, and great to see that Magdeburg can score some goals when George and I aren't there. So
exactly. Exactly, it's good to see. Colin, for you, I've actually had this thought mid-podcast. It's something we're going to bring into the show from now on, but I think we should all come with some kind of fun fact about the week in Germany or something. And you actually had one earlier, which involves Freiburg's massive result against Mönchengladbach, which was 6-0. What's your fun fact of the week, Colin?
Slightly recycled fact is I actually heard it from the Bundesliga commentary during the game, but my main thought during the Gladbach Freiburg hammering was it reminded me a lot of Germany beating Brazil 7-1 in the 2014 World Cup, which led to, I mean, there was five quick fire goals in the first half hour in that game. The commentator actually said that Freiburg got to 5-0 quicker than Germany did in that game, which I thought was quite interesting, because when I saw that game 7 years ago, that seemed like a total one-off. But now German football has its own domestic version of that. There you go.
That was
the fact of the week.
That's your GFP fun fact of the week, a new segment that I thought about 10 minutes ago while we were recording this podcast. But yeah, so we'll say goodbye to Robert and Colin for now. We'll hopefully not have to do this again. I actually waved for some reason, like waving to the guys. I'm never going to see them again. Hopefully George will have his act together next week or the next time he's on, and we'll be here for the full podcast. But we'll jump in with George now just to talk about some 1860 Munich things.
Auf Wiedersehen.
So we are finally now joined by George Balakrishna. George, how are you doing? You were a bit busy earlier to get the full recording done, but you're now here to talk all things 1860 Munich.
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. It's good to see we're quite a high-level technology podcast, as recording this in two parts. The first recording happened yesterday when I did have my act together. I was actually at football training. I wasn't just, you know, taking a leisurely walk around the very cold Hamburg. I was at football training. But I'm here now, ready for the second part, the second and more exciting part, I hope. looking forward to getting, you know, into the biggest news of the week. Most German football podcasts the week after the so-called Der Klassiker would be, you know, really getting their teeth stuck into Dortmund and Bayern. But we're going to be focusing on the bigger news of the week, which is the storm around Sascha Mulder and 1860 Munich, which has gone on from Monday afternoon. So looking forward to get stuck into that, really.
Yeah, so basically, you're coming in as our Dritte Liga and 1860 expert, shall we call you. So I think it's what's best if you just give us a rundown, because it's been a lot going on, a lot of changing. There's been going on, there's been a lot of different things being said, different days. So try and your best to summarise it for us.
Yeah, so maybe for anyone who doesn't know, any listeners who aren't aware of who Sascha Mulder is, he's the talisman, the character, the face of the club of 1860, has a lot of goodwill in Germany, really, because he's sort of, you know, not got the typical physique or character of a normal professional footballer. He has played in the Bundesliga, famously scored against Bayern when he was playing for Augsburg, and Augsburg's first ever win over Bayern. But, you know, whenever anyone talks about 1860, whenever you tell anyone you're 1860 fan, the first thing they'll talk about is Sascha Mulder. So he sort of really does embody everything. Well, he's real the symbol of 1860 at the moment. And like I said, yeah, he's got a lot of goodwill. I mean, he's been with us since 2016, which means he was with us when we were relegated two leagues at the same time. And I think a lot of fans have a lot of respect for him, but he's kind of one of the only players to have been with us throughout that whole tricky time, going down to the regular army of Bayern and whatnot. And he's always sort of had this sort of status as being a bit untouchable, which is probably where things have gone wrong in hindsight. But, you know, I think I'm going to try and give you a fairly short, or might end up being quite long because it is very complicated. I'll try my best to give you as short as possible sort of timeline of what's gone wrong this week. But when I was trying to put this timeline together, I was thinking that you can't really start on Saturday or on Monday without going back to the 16th of May, the famous loss to Ingolstadt on the last day of the season, when had we have won that game after a very, very impressive campaign. I think Sascha got 24 goals in 36 games, player of the season in the Dritte Liga. If we'd have won that game, we would have gone into the relegation spot to play against Osnabrück, who at the time were probably a worse team than they are now. And unfortunately, the keeper sent off in the ninth minute, didn't work out. And, you know, after the game, there were, you know, scenes of togetherness with the players going outside of the car park, the fans who had travelled to watch outside the stadium, you know, sharing a creative beer together. The Kölner and Mulder's looking like they were, you know, they put everything into the season. But the feeling generally was that we put so much effort into it that, you know, we surely will be able to go again next season. But there was behind that always a fear that, given how much effort had been put into it, that if that wasn't the season, then we might not come again. Anyway, so fast forward to now, really, after a season in which, with a fairly poor quality of the Dritte Liga, like I've said on the pod many times this season, 1860 find himself in 12th. And with the exception of the 6-0 win at home to Freiburg's Fi, and the two cup wins against Darmstadt and Schalke, there really has been very little to speak about in the way of positives of 1860. You know, and the low point really, along with you know, the losses to like Zwickau this season's very, very disappointing draws, was the 5-0 loss, the 5-2 loss to Leaders Magdeburg. But the issue was, you're down 5-0 at halftime, and like Roy and I were just saying before we started recording, it was pretty comical the way that we lost, and wow. Comical in terms of you just couldn't believe how poor we were. And so that was on Saturday, and that obviously really started an inquest in the club, which was focused around Sascha Mulder, really. So essentially, I think also it's important to mention that in this game, with the game in the balance of 1-0, admittedly after 9 minutes, well, they scored after 2 minutes, but at 9 minutes, we have a penalty. Philipp Steinhardt, usually the penalty taker, is not on the pitch due to suspension. So Dennis Dressel steps up to take it instead of Mulders, which is a bit of an odd decision, misses it. Previous game, Steinhardt also unavailable. Keanu Stauder, sort of a fringe player, steps up to take it in one of the worst penalties I've ever seen, despite Mulders also being on the pitch. He's sort of asking, in these games where we're losing to Mannheim, Magdeburg, good teams, why is Mulders not taking the responsibility? And I think that really led to the discussion which was had on Sunday afternoon, Monday afternoon, between Mulders himself, the captain, Gorenzel, sporting director, Michael Kölner, the head coach, Robert Reisinger is the president, and Marc-Nicolo Pfeiffer, who's like the assistant sporting director, if you will, and basically suggesting that the sporting performance of Sasha hasn't been good enough compared to last season, which is true. Only 6 goals this season, no competitions. And that it would be better if maybe he took the next 2 weeks, that is to the end of this calendar year, off to focus on his fitness, and that we'll try and sort the situation out going into the new year. That was at 3:30 on Monday. 4:30 on Monday, Sasha Mulders puts out a post which shocks the world, stealing headlines all over the globe, as he posts basically saying, might be easier if I just read it out to you, if anyone has not seen it. It says, Dear Lions fans, today I came to the training ground and I was informed that I should not come to training anymore, but instead train alone because the head coach wants me to do so. As captain of this club, I wish the team only the best. I am shocked. Blue-white greetings from your Sasha. Now, that, of course, was a massive shock, kind of came out of the blue, and made everyone sort of, really question what was going on. And everyone really jumped to the side of Sasha Mulders. A lot of 1860 fan groups on popular social media website Facebook. The members were all changing their profile picture to the same picture of Mulders in solidarity, etc. So really all on the side of Mulders. And then a very rushed statement comes out from the club about 45 minutes later, stating, kind of confirming what Sasha has said, that he won't be involved in the squad for the foreseeable, and also makes a brief comment about how Oliver Beer, current assistant coach, will no longer be involved in the first team, but take over as head of the youth development, because that's part of his development he wants to move into like the playing side as he'll become a head coach eventually. That's kind of not very relevant, but that was part of the statement. So anyway, everyone on Monday evenings, very sort of, you know, like I said, in solidarity with Sasha. It's only the Abendzeitung who are reporting that there was issues with Sasha Mulders arguing with various players, but a lot of people this time sort of taken up a pinch of salt, because like I said, it's not, you know, what people would expect, including myself, of Sasha, who's been involved in the club for so long. Then on Tuesday, Günter Gorenzel, the sporting director, comes out and speaks to a very select group of media, which is Magenta Sport and Bayerische Fernsehen, and basically explains that, unlike what Mulders instead had said, that he's not suspended and he has instead been asked to train by himself for the next 2 weeks, and the decision is based on a sporting basis only. The main point to underline here is that the club made the point to Sasha that it wasn't happy with him being involved in as many off-field activities as he is, which means that, you know, he's a columnist for the website Kicker. He's a TV expert for DAZN here in Germany, and he's got his own merchandising, and that they really wanted him to sort of focus on the club, and that he hoped that that Gorenzel hopes to sort of resolve this tension between, you know, Kölner and Mulders by talking to Sasha's agent. But there were no real questions to be asked, and it was quite a short statement from Gorenzel, the sporting director at the time. And then on Wednesday, sort of more things come out from inside the 1860 circle, basically confirming what the Abendzeitung had reported on Monday, that there's a load of issues which had arisen between the players and the staff at 1860, including the fact that, Philipp Steinhardt, as the head of the players committee, had contacted Kölner to say that things weren't working, that he was constantly causing arguments in the changing rooms, including having a physical altercation with Stefan Sauger, who's one of the most senior players in the club after the loss to Kaiserslautern. Didn't express he was so unhappy with Marcel Bär's performance that he didn't want to play with him and wanted him to be benched. And that he'd previously been asked to stop bringing his family on the pitch for interviews and for celebrations, which in itself isn't, you know, that big of a deal. But I think it's the principle that it was only him who's ever allowed to do that and no one else's family. And especially that because it was asked to stop and he did it anyway, kind of underlies the point that he's kind of for a long time felt that he's kind of bigger than the club, which is of course difficult. And like I said, with his other activities off the pitch that he was pursuing them instead of turning up to training, etc. So at this point, in the space of 48 hours, I've been talking for a while now, we'll wrap it up, but at this point, space 48 hours, things have completely turned on their head, and everyone, and it has basically leapt to the side of Kölner and the club. And in hindsight, the Instagram post on Monday was very much an attempt from Sasha to get everyone on his side very quickly before all the news came out, which is sad to see. And anyway, so now today's Friday, and since then, leading journalists of 1860, like Oliver Griss from Die Blaue Vierundzwanzig, said that it's probably unlikely that he'll ever play for the club again, leading to the fairly prominent rumour today, which I will tell Roy until we record this, but that it's likely now that Sasha could actually be on his way for a winter transfer alone, because he's only, but his contract's up in 6 months anyway, to the city rivals, to Gutsche München.
Nah.
Yeah. A club which Sasha Mulders has previously in an interview described as a Kreisklasse team, so a Sunday league team, who had previously criticised the club's lack of fans, of tradition, of history. But like I said, he lives in Mehring, which is in Bavaria near Augsburg, and that he basically doesn't really want to move at this point in his life. So the only option for him would probably be to go to Toguchi. So some very credible journalists are suggesting that could happen very quickly, sort of in the winter transfer window. I think that would just be, I think that would probably be the final nail in the coffin. I mean, everyone at 1860 is very thankful for him for everything that he's done, but I think to go to Toguchi after everything he said would be, I think would highlight something about his character, really. But that's not been confirmed yet. So now it looks like, yeah, Sasha Mulders will no longer be an 1860 player. And it's sad to see. I mean, I'll ask you, Roy, now that I've given this big dialogue, yeah, eulogy to Sasha, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, it's sad to see, because he's such an iconic club figure as well. And I think that sometimes, like you mentioned, like no one's bigger than the club, but sometimes you get that admiration for a player that you don't associate them with anything else bar the club itself. And it's like my first question back to you would probably be, who comes off worse here? No matter the outcome, who comes off worse here? Mulders, the club, anyone inside the club, in your mind, who actually comes off worse after this whole week of scandals and week of changing statements and different statements? Who's the worst off?
I think, honestly, Sasha, by quite some distance. I mean, there actually seems to be quite a lot of optimism in 1860 circles now that, I mean, we've got a big game against Dortmund Spy on Saturday, which will be available on YouTube for free outside of Germany, which is good. there seems to be a lot of optimism going into that game. The club, I mean, there's been reports that the players feel relieved now that this whole the situation's been come out as it has, and that he's out of the squad. There seems to be a great deal of optimism about how they can push forward about a constant character of, you know, I mean, there's reports of Sasha and Sasha's wife, you know, sending abusive text messages to players and him picking on the younger players and everything. That's just not what you need as a captain. And they've got a lot of younger players in attacking roles who might be able to step up now. So and I think, you know, Sasha's reputation is really taking a beating here. And I can't see that, given the fact that it's come out a lot of things about his character, I'm not sure if Kicker will continue to take him on as a columnist, if he still will continue with the zone. And I think, I mean, if like I said, if he makes the move to Gucci, he might just choose to retire, really. And you know, I said he'll always have the respect of 1860 fans, principally for staying with us. He went down to the Regionalliga, but I think there's potential. I mean, despite being in 12th, 1860 are only actually nine points off the promotion spot, which is testament to how close the Dritte Liga is. And, you know, if we went a decent run from now with a bit of sense of freshness in the side, we could kick on. But for Sasha, I think he's probably found himself in quite a lonely, isolated place now.
Yeah, and like one of the biggest parts of this coming off is the fact he has got his other ongoing activities. Do you feel a player still, okay, he's getting on in his career and it's not like he's playing Bundesliga football either, but do you think that there should be a priority coming when you're playing a game to talk about other teams, to write about other things? And do you also think that might have been more of a hindrance had 1860 actually been promoted this year as well? Do you think this would have been inevitable? It would have happened?
Yeah, I think there's two things here. The first is that all these things are all well and good. And, you know, I thought it was great when 1860 were doing well and you see our captain appearing on Germany's biggest football website and on the zone, you see him on TV. I sort of think, but when you look back on it, in those columns and on those TV appearances, he actually never spoke about 1860. It was all kind of talking about himself. So I'm not sure he wasn't really representing 1860 in a great way. And with that, now the things aren't going bad, I think that it's very difficult to, you know, maintain this public presence where, like, on TV, if you're going into the dressing room 5-0 down at half time, but then the next day you're on TV giving opinions on the Bundesliga, for example, it's not a great look at all. Further to that, and leading into my second point, is that, you know, his own merchandising, which, you know, sort of his caricature of like a fat, you know, player essentially doing a bicycle kick, that's what his merchandising is. And although that's funny, and it is funny when things are going well, when things aren't going well, the fact that it's kind of reflecting a bit of the club as a bit of a joke, which is why, you know, the people in the club asked him to stop that and asked him to stop the appearances. So that's my second point, is that given the fact that he's been asked to stop doing this, but he's done it anyway, I just think underlines that he probably has, maybe for a while, and maybe it's the fault of the fans for bigging him up in the same way, or the fault of, you know, football fans in general who've kind of elevated him to their status, but he kind of thinks he's invincible. And I think he's probably learnt the hard way now the fans have found everything out, that he's not invincible. And I think, I mean, it would have been very difficult if we had been promoted, because I can't imagine we would have done very well, in honesty. And I think a similar situation would have, because we wouldn't have had the money to put together a real good Zweite Liga side. The appearances, the columns would have continued in spite of a relative lack of success. So I think it probably was all going to come to a head in the end. I think being a little bit smarter about things and realising that his actions are ultimately reflecting on the club and not in a positive light by any means. So it's just honestly ridiculous how, I mean, if you'd asked me on Sunday or Monday to name of my top five footballers of all time, really, Sasha Mulders would be in there just for his status as an 1860 legend. But I think about 99% of 1860 fans now would be in agreement that he's
it's completely turned on its head now. And you know, it's in hindsight, you know, all the appearances, not talking about 1860, all the bringing his family on the pitch without anyone else being allowed to, blah blah. It all seemed a bit obvious, but it's only when something really comes to a head, like the catalyst for that was the Magdeburg game, that we kind of realised that we should have been aware earlier that something wasn't right there.
And just kind of bring this to a head, where did the club go from here? Is Kilner's pressure of them not performing well recently being lifted slightly from this? Or are we still looking at the exact same issues just now with 1860? Or will it, do you think there will be something after this that'll change?
I think in a way it's probably, after the Magdeburg game, there was a lot of pressure building on Kilner, to be honest. But I think he's probably earned a bit of credit from 1860 fans for the way that he's dealt with the situation. He gave a press conference today, a positive press conference today, the first time he's come out in the media since this all happened. And he was just keen to talk about the Dortmund game, really, and said that Stefan Lex is probably one of the most senior players in the club, will be the captain going forward. But he wasn't really too keen to carry on talking about the whole Mulder situation. And I think it's probably reflected well on Kilner that he's dealt with this situation and that he's not talked with too much, you know, emotive language the whole time. And like I said, where we are in 12th, really 9 points off, and it will probably free up space for the likes of Marcel Baer, who hasn't really had a great shot since coming from Braunschweig, likes of Tim Linsbechler, who's a young striker, 19, who had these, you know, Mulder's kind of taken his spot the whole time, just to push on, really. And I think maybe it's in a way bought Kilner a bit of time and, yeah, a bit of goodwill for the fact that they've sort of stomped out a fundamental problem within the club. And I mean, I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how the team plays against Dortmund's fire on Saturday afternoon, because, you know, if we go out there, and they're a very good side, don't get me wrong, if we go out there, if you look at the Magdeburg game, like we were saying, I mean, Robert said he was laughing at times how poor we were. It was like, it was like that scene in Space Jam where they just like lose all of their ability to perform as professional sportsmen. It was very, very strange. But if they go out there, play with a lot of fight, and they get a result, a draw, a win, you know, anything that's different to what's happened in the last few weeks, then I think that will probably kind of prove the point that there was a real issue with Mulder's presence in the squad, and that hopefully we can kick on, because if we get a couple of wins on the bounce, we're actually going to be right back up there, and there's still a lot of games to play, we'll eyes on the Dortmund game away on Saturday afternoon.
100%. I mean, thanks for being our expert there. And did you enjoy that, your own wee private interview? Felt like you're the top spiel of the podcast.
Yeah, I know. Well, like I said, I was at football training yesterday. I would have loved to be involved in the no doubt exciting conversation yesterday. But yeah, I quite like this staff status I've got. May long it continue.
The top spiel of the German football podcast, eh?
Exactly.
But I'm going to put you in a spot here. Do you have a fun fact? We only made this last night. I'm just telling you as well just now. Do you have a fun fact for the week? Or are you going to bail on us this week and come back with a better one?
Do I have a fun fact? It has to be football related.
It doesn't have to be, but it would. Collins was.
Well. I would say that I will come back next week with a phenomenally fun fact.
Excellent.
Because the only fun facts that come to me now are non-football related and maybe not appropriate. So I'll leave it for next week. So yeah, keep the listeners on their toes as well.
Of course, that's what we like to do here. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed that one. A good bit of chat. You know, we've got concentrated mainly on Felix Sveier. We then moved on to Jesse Marsch, about RB Leipzig and Tedesco. Also left a bit of Bakary Arta and then George's expertise on the Sacha Mulder's fiasco. So hopefully we'll see you back again next week with hopefully there's some brand new controversy in German football to talk about, and we'll see you then. So catch you later.